This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting with 94-year-old Francisco Paredes of Atwater, California, originally from Arizona, where he grew up as one of 16 children, 16, in one Mescalero Apache family. He joined the Army before the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor and served until after the Japanese surrendered. We've heard about the three different times he was wounded while serving in the Pacific. The third time, a tiny piece of shrapnel from a bomb caught him underneath the chin. Too close to his jugular vein to operate, doctors then told him to expect that little scrap of metal to migrate away from the jugular over time. And right before we left off, he described developing a severe toothache 40 years later. So this is in the 1980s now. And what happened next?
So I went to the dentist. He took x-rays. He said, "You got a piece of metal," he says, "in your root canal. Says your tooth has got to be pulled." So he pulled it. And sure as heck, there's a little chip of shrapnel.
So 40 years later, this little, how big would you say, like fingernail size piece of shrapnel?
I'd say about half of a match hit on the matchstick. Okay. It's just a little chip.
He pulls that out of your mouth 40 years later. That you must have gotten quite the kick out of that.
My wife got a kick out of it.
A lot of times when I hear these kind of stories from veterans, they then pull out the piece of shrapnel and show it to me. But I'm guessing if it was that small, maybe you didn't hang on to it?
No. I didn't want that as a souvenir. That's why I have 12 shoppers now.
When you think about that, I mean, I'm just adding it up. You survive the Pearl Harbor attacks. You end up in a B-25 bomber for one mission and get shot down and survive that. Then you're wounded in the leg. You're hit in the ribs and the back. Then you're hit near your jugular vein. Yet I look at you now and you're about the healthiest 94-year-old I can imagine. How in the world does all that happen? Is it hard for you to even believe?
It is very hard for me to believe, you know. A lot of younger people. In fact, I just had two friends that, you know, they just passed away. Well, I say, you know, young people, because one was 88 and the other one was 82. And they just passed away, you know. And, I don't know.
I know you said earlier you credited your Native American heritage, Mescalero Apache. You mentioned that the big boy upstairs helped you out in that case. But when you think about everything you've been through and the fact that you're still here, you ever wonder why? If there's a reason for all of that?
Yes, I think so. See, I do a lot of volunteer work. Like, I volunteer over here.
At the VFW post?
VFW post. Uh-huh. It's not very hard work, you know. I help them set up for hamburger night. I help them set up, you know, for breakfast on Sundays. I water the lawn. I do a lot of, you know, picayune stuff. I'm also a member of the county honor guard. It gives me a peace of mind, you know, to help do, you know, volunteer work. I also volunteer for senior citizens, AARP, you name it, they need me. And I also do lectures in schools, churches, and I tell these kids, go to school, get an education, stay away from cigarettes, gangs, graffiti, and dope. Those are killers. They're not, you know, I've been through a lot of people, and my last deal that I tell them is this, I've been through a lot, you know, in my life, but I never saw John Wayne in Iwo Jima, and I never saw him in Guadalcanal. I never saw him any place.
And you were at all those places?
No, not really, but I was in Bella La Bella. I was in Bougainville, Saipan, Tarawa. My last one was Iwo Jima.
And your brother was at Iwo Jima. In fact, you have some documentation that he was one of the first five people to make the top of Suribachi?
Yeah, my brother, Raul, to me, he was my hero because he never got credit for what he did. And Paul over here, he has it documented by some of his people, you know.
Yeah, let me try to explain that a little bit for our listeners. This is your brother, Raul. I have a picture of him on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. He's no longer with us, but he and four others were the first Americans to summit Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima. We've all seen that photo of the flag raising on top of the mountain. Joe Rosenthal took it, one of the most famous photographs of all time. And you've probably heard, perhaps even on this program, if you've been paying attention, that that photo was actually the second flag atop the summit. But one of the neat things about doing this show is that I always learn new things about World War II. And Frank's brother, Raul, is part of this one. Before either flag made it to the top of Mount Suribachi, Raul Paredes and four others had volunteered for dangerous duty, and they'd been ordered to scale that rocky volcano and find a cave that the Japanese were firing from. They had to go up in the dark of night, and they succeeded. More importantly, they survived. And a few hours after they did that, that first flag went up atop Mount Suribachi, brought by another patrol. So your brother had a very historic role on Iwo Jima, but you survived a lot during World War II, and we've heard quite a few of those stories. But eventually you got to come home from the war, to come back to America again. You're in from the start to the finish of U.S. involvement in World War II. So what was it like to come home, to see America again, and know that even at a very heavy cost, freedom had prevailed over tyranny?
I came home in 1946 because before I came home, I joined the 6th Division chasing down a general that had gone to Korea. So we chased him down. We didn't catch him. Another outfit, part of the 6th Division, caught him. But we got 3 unit citations for that. So then I came home. I tried to get a job. Couldn't find a job. I had a 1940 Chevrolet cab coupe. I had it in storage, but the tires were stolen. I couldn't get no tires for it. I couldn't get no clothes. I couldn't get a job. So I waited 6 months, and then I joined the National Guard. And at the time, the Korean War was starting to, you know, to develop. So then they sent me back to the Philippines, and from there to Japan. So when the Korean War broke out, I went to Korea. They airlifted me to Busan, and they put me in the tanks. I didn't know apples about tanks, but I had to learn real fast, you know. So they gave me a tank, but you couldn't very well use them on account of the snow. They had snow, believe it or not, 18 to 24 feet of snow. You try running a tank in the snow like that, your traction, you'll go deeper and deeper. So anyway, I spent a lot of time in caves. But I did get to go to as far as a chosen reservoir. Truman fired MacArthur. So anyway, they got orders to retreat, not to go as far as the 38th parallel. So one of those generals says, "We retreat, hell, we're going to advance to the rear." And that's what we did.
It's a pretty good euphemism, isn't it? Did you have some other close calls over there in Korea? And how long were you there?
I was in Korea for, I'd say, till 2 days before the war ended, you know. My knees started acting up. You know, I had a cap already.
From your first wound in World War II?
Yeah. And then I couldn't move my leg. It froze. So anyway, they sent me to Fitzsimmons General Hospital in Denver. And I was there for about 3 months. Incidentally, I have a frostbite too. And they treated that, you know, and I got my discharge there. And then they sent me home. When I got home, there was one friend of mine that got killed right in front of me. I promised him that I would go visit his family if I made it. So that's what I did, you know. When I got home, I went to Anthony, New Mexico, and met Frank Chavez's family. His brother was a Senator Dennis Chavez of New Mexico at the time, and that was the hardest thing I had to do. I went and told him, you know, "This is a message from your son. He died like a man, and he died a hero." So in Denver, before I got my discharge, this recruiter, you know, recruiting sergeant, he said, "If you stay in, we'll give you another stripe." I said, "Wait a minute." I says, "What will I be doing?" He says, "You will be delivering bodies all over the country." I says, "No, thank you. I'm out of here."
And what brought you to Atwater? How long you been here? How'd you end up here?
I ended up here I came to Monterey. I started putting my life together. I started fishing again. Nah, not for me. I said, I want to try something different. So I went into bricklaying, and that's when I retired as a bricklayer. I did it for 40 years.
And I guess the other thing I need to know when I think about this and everything that you survived, when did you meet your wife? Because it sounds like you had to survive a whole lot just to have the chance to meet her.
I went to Mexico, and I met my wife, bless her heart. I was 39 years old already, and she was 23. But she was adopted, you know. She was an orphan, and she had an adopted mother, you know. But they treated her like a slave. She was doing everything for everybody in the family. So one of my cousins there in Mexico told me, why don't you take Artemisa and marry her? I says, I don't know. I says, because, you know, she's a young girl, and I'm an old man already. She said, I think she likes you. So we start, you know, dating. In the meantime, I was in the fire department in Monterey, California. I went on vacation, and I told her adopted mother, I said, okay, if you don't let me marry her, I'm going to do it the old Indian way. We're going to elope. She didn't go for that. So anyway, I took a leave of absence from the fire department. Went down there. I said, okay, I said, here I am. Are we or aren't we going to get married? So the old lady said, okay, you're gonna get married, all right. But you're going to have to get married in Mexico, and then you're going to have to get married in the United States, make it legal in both countries. So that's what we did.
Before I run out of time, let me ask you about Honor Flight. What was it like for you to go on this plane with all these other veterans and go see that World War II memorial?
To me, it was beautiful. We were treated like royalty. We had the best of everything. But one thing, you know, I stole a pen from the Hilton Hotel. But I left $5 there. And they owe me $5 because the pen fell apart on me.
That's funny. And you got to do that with your daughter. What was that like to be able to have that whole trip and all those memorials that you saw and the other veterans you met and to share that with her?
Well, a lot of that she didn't believe, you know. But what got me the most, you know, because as a rule, I was Army, but mostly, you know, I feel myself being a Marine because most of my, you know, was with the Marines. So the Marine Memorial reminded me of my brother, my friends, the people that I knew in the Marine Corps, and especially the Code Talkers. The other one was Arlington National Cemetery, because I have two people, real good friends of mine, buried there. One is Junior Van Moyes. He got killed in New Guinea. He got the Medal of Honor. And the other one was a real, real good friend of mine, Frank Chavez. He got the Medal of Honor, too, from Anthony, New Mexico.
And you told us how you had to go and tell his family about that. Being around all those other veterans, I know you're around a lot of veterans here at the VFW all the time, but having that trip with 70 other World War II veterans or around that number, did you make some new friends? Did that add to your experience?
I made a lot of new friends, but I mean, most of them on wheelchairs, you know, and not me. Right now, you know, I'm a little, you know, because I twisted my ankle.
You were up on a ladder and fell a little bit?
I was up putting up a window air conditioner. And I asked for help, you know, but nobody would come and help me, you know. So anyway, I said, I can do it.
And you're still driving?
Oh, yes.
What else do you do with yourself at 94?
I do a lot of volunteer work, mostly.
When you think about your children and your grandchildren and just all the people that you meet here in Atwater, because like you say, you volunteer a lot and you're around a lot of folks. What do you want them to know about World War II, about you and your brothers and the guys who felt like brothers and what all of you did back then? Why was it important to remember that today?
I would like to have, being that there was four of us brothers in the military during World War II, I would like to have them put in the VFW magazine, like, you know, they do that, four brothers, you know, in the same. Yeah. I would love that, you know,
We'll see if we can do that. And the one other thing, you mentioned the Code Talkers. Did you have direct interactions with them during the war?
I met them with the 1st Marine Division.
So you felt like you had a special connection to them being Native Americans?
Yeah. So anyway, I did a powwow last year here at Table Mountain Casino. It was for all Native American World War II veterans. And incidentally, I was the oldest one and the only Apache warrior there. And I got honored for that.
As well you should. Well, Mr. Paredes, I just want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for sharing so much of your one-of-a-kind story with us today. And don't lose that spunk. Frank Paredes of Atwater, California. His buddies at the VFW there get a kick out of his hat and all the pins that he has on it related to his service in World War II in Korea. He also has a pin that has nothing to do with the Army, but might be the best conversation piece. And you can find a little video of him explaining all of that on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. If you didn't get enough of his personality in this last hour, you'll get a little bit more there. We're out of time on Hometown Heroes for today. I hope you'll join us again next time. And until then, I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you that freedom is not free.